something that has just gone, and we need to lose it and never see coal again. Leave it in the ground. We may have 200 more years of it, but we don't need it. We need to protect the planet.
The book is Black Gold, The Rise, Reign, and Fall of American Coal by Bob Wiss. Bob, thanks so much for being my guest on Sea Change Radio.
You're welcome.
Sway the future to the past and find what will endure.
You've been listening to Sea Change Radio. Our intro music is by Sanford Lewis, and our outro music is by Alex Wise.
Additional music by Galactic, Brownie McGee, and John Anderson.
Check out our website at seachangeradio.com. That's seachangeradio.com to stream or download the show or subscribe to our podcast. Visit our archives there to hear from Bill McKibben, Van Jones, Paul Hawken, and many others. And tune in to Sea Change Radio next week as we continue making connections for sustainability. For Sea Change Radio, I'm Alex Wise.
You are listening to KBOO Portland, 90.7 FM. Listener-supported community radio.
KBOO's loud and proud. Become a member during our KBOO Out Loud Fall Membership Drive, taking place now through September 20th. Your contribution goes towards grassroots, independent, radically made community radio. Donate now by going to kboo.fm/give. That's kboo.fm/give and help us reach our $45,000 goal. Thank you.
My name is Joseph Gallivan. You're listening to Art Focus on KBOO Portland. My guest this week is photographer Alan Weeder. His new photo book, We Will Not Be Removed, The People of King School Park, is out on September the 2nd. Thanks for doing Art Focus by Zoom, Alan.
Excited to be here, Joseph.
Yeah, so you're on the other side of the country, but you took a bunch of photos in King Park, kind of playground park of the King School in Northeast Portland,
right,
a few years ago, and now you've made them into a book. How did that happen? You just chanced upon this park where you lived near there?
Yeah, I lived in Northeast Portland for 19 years, mm-hmm, and just moved to the East Coast last year to be closer to family. But I was in the park, and there was a political protest, just as there was throughout, starting in the summer of 2020, the first year of COVID, and I saw these guys on a hill, and I went up and asked if I could take pictures, and they started doing signs and stuff, and I pretty bold taking pictures, and said, "All right, stop with the signs, and I'll take some more." And they
what
did.
What kind of signs? American,
I don't
signs?
Know if they were gang signs or whatever, you know, but they had no problem stopping. And then I said, will you guys be here tomorrow? And they said, well, some of us are here every day. And I said, all right, well, I'll bring back some pictures for you. And they were like, yeah, right, sure you will. And so I did, and I brought back 25 8.5 by 11 prints, 5 different pictures, gave them to the people. And there was, not by everybody, but there was a great welcoming. And I started going every day.
Yeah. Just tell me, how did you print off? You were shooting digitally, and you printed on digital printer?
You know, I have it's old now, but it's a really good Epson printer, and I just went home and spent, you know, hours processing, and then, mm-hmm, and took them back. And that's what happened throughout the whole 4 years I was in the park. I would take pictures every day and bring them to the people.
So the immediate reward for them was prints, like nice prints,
big prints, and they liked it a lot. Yeah.
Tell us, what's the setup when you look through the book? It's a bit of everyone, really, you know. It's little kids, old people, young guys, people sitting around playing games, drinking. Often they've got their winter coats on. So it's kind of, they're out in the park like all year round, right?
Yeah, some people are in the park all year round. And they were, this is a neighborhood that, as you know, is a gentrified neighborhood.
Yeah.
It started in the 1990s. And a lot of these people, for various reasons, were African-American people that were pushed out of the neighborhood. So there are people that still live there, but great numbers of the people that come to the park live way out in East Portland. So they drive a fairly long way to come to the park. And there's camaraderie there of the people that come. And you mentioned the setup. And so the book is very traditional in the sense that on the right-hand page are photographs, and on the left-hand page, on many of the pictures, are quotes from the interviews I did with the people in the park.
And they're all black and white, right?
They're all, the photographs are all black and white. They range from elders who are in their late 60s to new babies, kind of a family thing. And they all continually talk about, this is family, even though it's not blood family, it's family. And there's and there's great stories, because there's great insights into the world that they've lived in and their parents and grandparents have lived in. And I think, you know, part of the book is there's a Pulitzer Prize winning author named Mitchell Jackson who grew up in the neighborhood. He wrote the foreword to the book, and he grew up two blocks away from the school.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Mitchell, Portlanders all know him. He won a Pulitzer Prize for his essay about running while black.
I know, in Runner's World, whoever heard of of somebody winning a Pulitzer?
And he's also written about basketball, and he's, you know, he's like a very talented writer, but he happened to grow up in that neighborhood. So he wrote a really interesting foreword about what it was like being a kid around there. And then he points out that, you know, suddenly everything got a bit sketchy and his neighborhood turned into a hood. So in this incarnation of when you were visiting, was it kind of post-hood, you know, is it gentrified and now this is a little remnant of what was there still visible?
Well, you know, one of the beauties of it was the way that the people who came to the park every day got along with the people who ended up buying their family houses. I mean, people would walk through the park and I never saw any animosity. So, I mean, the only animosity I saw occasionally was dogs, but people were very friendly toward each other at this point. And yet when some of the people that were in their 40s and 50s talked about losing their family homes and stuff, it's, you know, that's not a pretty story.
Let's look at a picture on page 85.
Okay.
It's called, the titles are usually the people's names. This one is Noel, Occhione, and Bobby. And there's a little setup. Bobby saying he put his hands on another kid. He was confused, like, why I gotta go apologize.
Yeah.
So you've got a guy, a young man in sort of long shorts. He's got Adidas, looks like Samba on, and a white T-shirt and a baseball cap that's backwards. And he's the center of the frame, but he's looking away from the camera. So you only see a little profile of his face. But he's looking down at a little boy who's looking up at him. I guess that's the setup, you know, the older man is telling off the young boy.
And it's his son.
Oh, it's his son, okay. To the left, there's a young girl looking on.
You know, those kind of things happened a lot in the park where, and it made a difference in the way that I took pictures. So I'd say the first year or so, I took pictures that were either portraits or group pictures. And then I sort of became a fly on the wall that nobody cared if I was taking their picture, no matter what was going on. And so this is one of those photographs, right, where they don't even know I'm shooting. And when they saw the picture, they were fine. They didn't need to. So it was a clear thing of doing photography and doing art, but at the same time, building relationships and building and having trust both ways. And I can tell stories about that, but it became for me, there were relationships in the park.
Yeah. So, I mean, if anyone looks into your work, Alan Weider, Weider, they're going to see you're a street photographer. So you've been all over the world, you know, Havana, Mexico, you know, all over the US, shooting people in the street. So it's that really, it's a short-term connection. You try and get something out of people. But in this case, you were doing it over 4 years. So you got a bit of both, right? You got that candid, that who's who, I need to get your name down. And you also knew them as characters and into they had relationships.
Absolutely. And they protected me.
Mm-hmm.
So I didn't even realize it at the time. Very soon, after a couple months, anytime I walked down the street, because people would come and park their cars on the street, and I sometimes would walk down, and there was one of the elders, a guy named Tracy, who I realized followed me every time I did that. And he was making sure that people knew that I was accepted in the park. And other people actually, there were a couple times when people came to the park and it's like, you know, who in the hell is he?
Yeah.
And somebody would step up and go, hey, he's in the park more than you are. That kind of thing.
Right.
And so they're literally, I mean, this past week I spoke on the phone with two of the people who I saw pretty much every day in the park and stay in touch all the time.
Is the scene still happening?
Yes. Maybe the most important thing of having this book come out is being able in 2 weeks to go to the park and give people in the park the book.
Mm-hmm. There's another image. In fact, it's the next one. It's page 87, and it's five guys standing around a table, like a slatted picnic table.
Yep.
They're wearing very casual clothes, like hoodies, down vests. But one of them is in a three-piece suit, right? He's got a waistcoat and a big, wide collar. He's got a shiny bald head and a big smile on his face. So this one's called Chol, Pastor Hardy, Tamir, Jimmy, and Fade. And Fade is a character you see in the book a lot. And it looks like they're drinking booze and there's bottles of water as well, lighters and stuff. What was the occasion, or was there even an occasion? Like, why is the pastor out there?
This day there wasn't a particular occasion, but Hardy is in the park all the time, and Hardy has a long reputation in Portland. His father was a major minister, African-American minister, and he was a child gospel musician and is still a gospel musician and is not the main pastor, but is a pastor on a little church on Killingsworth where he took me for Easter. So it's just another one of those kind of things when you become, I'm an outsider who went into a community and was treated really well. And so, and Hardy, Hardy was one of the regular people in there who I got to know really well.
Pastor Hardy.
Pastor Hardy, yeah. Hardy is his name. But
is he ministering as he hangs out, or is
no, not at all.
One of the boys.
But they do, like you asked, is this an event? There's great celebrations in the park. And there's also not celebrations, but grieving of things that have happened to some of the people that come to the park or their children. And and Hardy, at some of these celebrations, they Hardy's the one that plays music and plays it really well. I think there's a picture early in the book of a man who goes by the name Boo, and he's got cash pinned with safety pinned to his
It's his birthday. Yeah.
It was his birthday.
Boo's birthday, page 9.
Yeah, yeah. And so birthdays are celebrated. And it was just spectacular to watch. And that was one of the things. People gave people money on their birthdays. $20 bills on shirts.
So, yeah, so I was going to talk about that picture because it's also kind of striking. Boo is sitting there. in a lawn chair, you know, like a folding camp chair.
Yes.
And he's wearing sweatpants, a white kind of singlet, you know, like a vest. Yep. And then there's a bunch of money, probably 10 bills stuck to his chest.
Right.
And he's sitting there with his hands together, his fingers in a steeple, and his sort of calm look on his face, slight smile, looking directly at the camera. He's also got a lighter or something attached to his trousers. So when you're shooting, do you know when you're going to make a sort of classical portrait where they look at the camera? And do you know when you're going to make a candid where everyone's looking in different directions?
Yeah, I do. And if I'm glib, I'll say I'm lucky when I get a shot like that of Boo.
Yeah.
Because that doesn't always happen, right? And so framing on portraits for me is really easy, and I'm very comfortable with it, and I'm very close. In terms of candid pictures, there's a picture of a guy named Zoe. I don't remember what page it's on, but he's teaching a bunch of kids on a table, and I didn't know what he was teaching them about. They all have phones or computers, and I just saw it, you know, and that's a picture. None of them are looking at me. They have no idea I was shooting, and they love the picture. The kids love the pictures, and so did Zoe. And, you know, and that became part of the whole spirit of being there. Appreciation both ways. I mean, I still think I was getting more out of it than they were.
Like I was saying, street photography is done in 30 seconds, but this went on for 4 years.
Yeah.
So what's the difference in quality of the pictures you get when you know someone?
I think it changes, and I think it, I mean, I can take very good pictures on the street, and I'm doing it here in Asheville now because I don't know the people and I don't have a project.
Mm-hmm. There's something. Where are you now?
In Asheville, North Carolina.
Asheville? Oh,
yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, we moved here a month before the hurricane destroyed a big part of the city. So great welcome. I probably couldn't get a picture doing street photography, like the picture on page 7 of one of the elders, Carl, and a young man named June talking with each other. And I call it respect, that picture.
Mm-hmm. I'll just describe it. The younger guy is wearing a white T-shirt. He's got a tattooed bicep, and he's putting his arm on the older man's shoulder. He's also wearing a T-shirt, sort of a darker one. And the older man, you know, he's got a shiny, bald head, and he's looking quite serious. But the young guy's like looking at him, and he's smiling, and he's got his head cocked to one side. And it's such a sort of friendly gesture. You know,
it's warmth, you know, that's what it is. And you might see that on the street, but the more you know people and you're part of their community, that might be a stretch. That might be unfair for me to say, but you see scenes like this and they mean more because you know them. And again, they had no idea I took this picture at the time.
Mm-hmm. Oh, okay.
You know, and when I gave it to Carl, I think there's a quote from Carl, and he's talking about the young people that he knows in the community in the park,
and
he's got a job as an elder to try to help people stay on the right path, and the respect that comes from that.
My name is Joseph Gallivan. You're listening to Art Focus on KBOO Portland. My guest this week is photographer Alan Weeder. His new book, We Will Not Be Removed, The People of King's School Park, is out on September the 2nd. And Alan, you said you're living on the East Coast in Asheville, North Carolina.
Yep.
But you lived in Portland for 19 years. You're coming back, right? So people listen to this. Where can they see you and your work in the coming weeks?
So there's a number of things going on. There's going to be a month exhibit at Franklin Photo, which is in St. John's.
Mm-hmm.
Franklin Photo is a place that has a gallery, but they specifically teach courses and have memberships for people that still shoot film photography. So even though this was a digital project, the pictures will be on the wall there. I think there's 30 pictures that are going to be on the wall. And there's a reception on Saturday, the 6th of September, from 5 to 8.
Oh, okay.
At the gallery.
So people can see the work, and will you be there?
Yes, I'll be there from 5 to 8.
Okay. And is there some other place or event where you'll be?
Yeah, on Wednesday night, the 3rd, I'm going to talk about the book as I show pictures through digitally. I'm going to, at Broadway Books in Northeast Portland.
Oh, okay.
So yeah, that's from 6 to 7.
There are some touching pictures of women together. Two that really jumped out. It just said daughter and mother.
Yeah.
One is the younger woman, I think, hugging the older woman, and just got her arm around her shoulder. The other woman is looking away. You know, they're just in normal clothes, like a winter coat and sort of a patterned blouse with a hoodie over it. I guess you sort of happened upon people just hanging out and talking and being affectionate. Yeah.
And it was a mother and daughter, and I never knew them well. They weren't regulars, but they were in the park that day. And
yeah.
I took that picture because the warmth that was going between them, this daughter looking up at her mother, I thought was a very special moment. And that's why I took the picture, and that's why it's included. I mean, most of the people in the book are people that I saw day after day, but there's some exceptions to that. And that's one of them.
And then right at the beginning of the book, on page 5, there's Zakara and, is it Helena or Helena?
I think it's Helena.
Okay. And they're just, it's such a great picture. It's two young girls just laughing. You know, one is, her eyes are closed and her mouth is wide open with laughter. And a friend is sort of falling over backwards as she laughs and pulling to kind of stay up, just sort of hanging on to her. And they're sitting in the park, trees framing their heads, and a very sort of 50-50 horizon, grass and sky with a few buildings. And the light is really shining down on them. You know, it must be noon because the light is vertical.
Yeah, it was probably a little later, but the sun was coming definitely. I just thought it was a beautiful moment to also. And Helena was someone who was at one point in the park often and then not. And that, you know, that would happen. I took some pictures early on of people that either moved too far away. But even those, it was these moments when emotion was present. And that's not necessarily happening in the straight portraits, but it's what I loved about being in the park. And you mentioned that there's a bunch of pictures of, or there's a number of pictures of Fade, and Fade became someone who I, without hesitation, call a friend. And he was there a lot. Besides taking his picture, he had real conversations. One of the things I did with some of the regulars, because I didn't know if I was going to be able to publish a book. You know, you never know that. It's not easy to get a photography book published. And so I would do these zines through Blurb, which is a company that you can print either books or magazines, photographic books or magazines. And I would do one, I did maybe 6 or 7 of them for various people in the park and just brought them and gave them to him. And every time I did it, there would be people that had seen it and would come to the park who I had no idea who they were, asking me to do a magazine about them. Because people showed them off. The people from the park showed off these magazines. There were moments when people would get teased about, so you have your own Ebony magazine only on yourself. Great.
There are some classics. I mean, there's like kids with chihuahuas, and there's a kid hanging by one hand from a basketball hoop.
Right.
And he's so young and thin. He just looks gigantic in the picture. The way he composed it, you know, his sort of diagonal body hanging from this hoop is sort of hilarious. What is it about professionally taken photo that people react to? Because we all take pictures all day now.
Yeah, that was one of the beauties of the project, because everybody has a phone, right? And they're taking pictures of each other and selfies and families. And It was interesting because at the beginning of the project, because of COVID, I was actually taking photographs with a longer focal length lens because of COVID. And as time moved on, relatively quickly, I was taking pictures and being very close to people. And we had some amazing conversations with a number of people, including Fade and the woman Rosie, who was the matriarch of the park, trying to talk people into getting vaccines for COVID, where so many people wouldn't, just no way they were going to do that. They didn't trust it. And the toughest person in the park was one of the people telling people to get vaccines, which was great. So I shoot with a fancy camera. You asked about, doing, I shoot with with the Leica Q series, which is a small Leica camera. And if I brought a different camera, people noticed. I mean, I don't know how many times people go, "Oh, that's an older camera." Why? It's they would notice that, which I still haven't figured out quite what it meant to them. But it did mean something. It did mean something.
Well, I mean, you pay such attention to composition and lighting, whereas most of us don't, right? We just like it's just content.
Yeah, and
So,
afternoon lighting is not easy, early afternoon lighting or
yeah, was that the common time afternoon?
weekends like around 1, 1:30, and weekdays, because they had great respect for the school children. So they were not, when school was, I mean, because it was COVID, might have been part of the reason I was able to do this project, because school wasn't in session.
Oh,
So
yeah.
people would start coming at 2 or 3, but after school went back into session, nobody came before 3:30. When the kids got out of 3, they didn't want to interfere with the kids on the playground, with the kids. It was the kids' school, not theirs.
Yeah.
And that was greatly respected.
And who's Tut? She seems like she's white, maybe.
Oh,
It's hard to tell. Sitting in a car with a chihuahua, big tattoo, fag in her mouth, and these giant mirror sunglasses.
yeah, she, and she was there. She was there a lot. She was there a lot. And she was one of the people. I mean, I know a lot of the people's history. I don't know hers well, but I know that she grew up tough and she was very, very strong. But also, she seemed to serve as sort of a little bit older person for some of the young women that were there. There were a number of young women that were there every day. I mean, it was a high percentage of men. But then when they had celebrations, it was amazing because whole families came out. And Rosie cooked. Rosie, like I said, was the matriarch. Rosie started cooking many years before, when the Black Panthers did the food programs for kids. And she got involved in that and cooked, and cooked every day. It was a bash. And they were amazing to me. So, like, for example, one day there was a celebration, and somehow there was no beer anymore. And I said, "Was somebody making a run?" And I took out some money. And one of my favorite people in the park, who goes by the name Peanut, and he's in the book a number of times also, he goes, "Alan, your money's no good here. You give us pictures. You make our lives better. You don't pay for beer," which was absolutely great. There's a number of people I want to thank. The designer of the book was John Larson. He's a well-known designer in the Northwest. Somebody told him about the photographs, and I met him, and I had about 50 photographs there, and he fell in love with them. I'm not a designer. I was just so fortunate and thrilled to have him. The other shout out, besides to the people in the park, who what makes the book, obviously, is to my friend Phil Weicklund. He was the one that brought me to that organization, the Oregon Cultural Heritage Commission, and kind of nurtured them deciding to publish the book. The Oregon Cultural Trust Commission threw in a lot of money. I just feel so privileged and fortunate that people came around to this. other photographers. I was part of a photography group in Portland who saw the pictures and would critique them. And a very well-known photographer in Portland, Rich Rollins, went through sequencing with me at least 20 times. And again, was much more brilliant than I was at putting together where things should go and how they work together. Wonderful thanks to special people who love the pictures. And
that's great, yeah.
Yeah.
I always wonder, you know, how you put a book together, because you probably shot thousands of pictures.
Yeah, over 5,000.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, yeah.
My name is Joseph Gallivan. You've been listening to Art Focus on KBOO Portland. My guest this week was photographer Alan Weeder. His book, We Will Not Be Removed, The People of King's School Park, is out on September the 2nd, and Alan will be in Portland at various events. Thanks very much for doing Art Focus by Zoom, Alan.
Thanks, Joseph. I'm thrilled to be on, and I hope people will listen and buy the book.
Andy Warhol looks a scream. Have him on my wall. Andy Warhol, silver screen. Can't tell them apart at all.
Estás escuchando KBOO Portland.
Bienvenidos a un breve informativo en su estación comunitaria KBOO 90.7 FM. Hoy martes 26 de agosto del 2025.